Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. And we have arrived at the 16th century, the 1500s, and Spain, in a matter of a handful of years, has been catapulted into a position of considerable power and influence. The kingdoms of Castile and Aragon have unofficially joined forces under the marriage and reign of Isabel and Fernando. The Muslims have given up their final hold on the Iberian Peninsula. Navarra has been absorbed in 1512, so essentially the territory of what is now present-day Spain has come under the leadership of one single leader. And it will basically stay that way to this very day. But as usual, I will sound out a very big caveat, because this isn't one political nation. It is almost like a federation in format. That's probably a loose description, and I'm not sure if everyone would agree with that. But by that, I mean that there are different kingdoms, and these kingdoms still had a lot of self-rule, a lot of autonomy, and their own jurisdiction. Originally, the heir to the throne after Fernando and Isabel was supposed to be their son, Juan, but he died young when he was just 19 years old. And then came their daughter, Isabel, but she died also just a year or two later, when she was giving birth to her son, Miguel de la Paz. Now, the son, Miguel, survived, and he became the crown prince to these kingdoms, in addition to the throne of Portugal, until he died a year and a half later. And that made Carlos's mother, Juana, the next in line. Her husband, Philip the Handsome, would become king by association, by marriage. It's known as jure uxoris, the legal justification. But Philip passed away just a few months after he became ruler of Castile. Juana, his wife, was left alone, and she tried to run things for a couple of years, but she was eventually shut up in a palace in the town of Tordesillas, and restricted to house confinement under the allegation that she was insane, or in the very least, unfit to rule. To this day, she is commonly known as Juana la Loca, or Juana the Mad, or Crazy Jane. Her mental instability has been highly exaggerated, according to some scholars. In any event, if any one of those circumstances that I was just telling you about had turned out differently, quite possibly, Carlos never would have been king. But as it stood, he was. Now, all he had to do was set foot on the land he was to rule over for the first time in his life and learn how to speak the local language. You see, Carlos was not from Spain. He wasn't born in Spain. He was born in Ghent, which is a city in modern-day Belgium, and he spent most of his youth there until 1516, when he departed to take on a very big change in his life. Carlos's reign lasted from that year, 1516, all the way to 1556, and it was marked by several phases. The first thing he had to do was reaffirm his status as ruler of the Spanish kingdoms, which was no easy task. To begin with, his mother, Juana, was still alive and technically queen of Castile, but she agreed to co-rule with her son and essentially handed over the reins to him. In Aragon, he had a much stronger case because he was the legitimate claimant to the throne. Even so, gaining acceptance was another story. The nobility had to be reckoned with, and in some parts, especially Castile, it was particularly feisty. As I was telling you before, Carlos was initially at a disadvantage for some very obvious reasons. He hadn't even been born in Spain. He could barely speak any one of the languages there, as we know. And on top of that, he arrived with his Flemish entourage, which dressed differently, behaved differently, and seemed little interested in adapting to local customs. While at the same time, they began to take all the important positions. To make matters more complicated, Carlos's grandfather, Maximilian I, died, leaving the throne of the Holy Roman Empire within his reach. To secure the post, he needed a lot of money to make a good impression there in Germany. And where did he get that money? It came from his kingdoms, of course. So Carlos raised the funds and departed, leaving his lieutenants in charge and his subjects pretty peeved. Carlos was named emperor in 1519 until 1556. 1519 was the very same year Cortes would initiate his conquest of the Aztecs. So a lot was happening and very quickly here. And in a question of a couple of years, one man was in control of the Spanish kingdoms and their possessions in the New World, as well as much of Central Europe and much of Italy. Spain was fast becoming a superpower, almost overnight. And not everyone was excited about this. To begin with, the Spanish themselves, his departure and rise to the throne as emperor didn't sit well with Castile's nobility, and his assistants were struggling to appeal to the locals, and the result was a revolt known as the Comonero Rebellion, in which several cities in Castile took up arms against the new ruler. They even tried to get his mother to remove him from power and take over. After all, she was the rightful ruler, but she turned down the offer. This took place between 1519 and 1521. Carlos managed to suppress the uprising. Another revolt in the Kingdom of Valencia, led by the guilds called the Germanias. This had more to do with a social uprising, a class struggle, and this kept things rather unstable in that area until 1523. Then finally things calmed down on the home front, but not so much abroad. And it was all this international instability that would dominate business for most of his reign. Carlos had become the universal leader, but his rule, his reign, was anything but peaceful. These pressing issues meant frequent and long departures from Spain, absences. In fact, Carlos turned out to be a kind of traveling monarch in the traditional sense of the word, the medieval sense of the word. He didn't have a capital, so his court sort of moved around the kingdom and the empire the way they used to. The problem was Spain was not his only possession. His empire was vast. This meant he had to travel constantly, and he spent thousands of days in Germany, thousands of days in Spain, and naturally also a lot of time in Italy and France. He also had many enemies. His main enemy in Europe was probably the King of France, Francis I, who was logically alarmed to find himself surrounded by Spain and Spanish possessions, because they also controlled the Low Countries, Belgium and the Netherlands to the north, and Germany to the east, and many parts of Italy to the south, as well as obviously Spain. A war broke out, and at their first major encounter at the Battle of Pavia in 1525, it was a major victory for Carlos. In fact, Francis was captured and even imprisoned and taken to Madrid in a tower that's still there today. He was finally released on the promise that he would stop attacking Carlos's armies and possessions in Italy. Did it work? Absolutely not. Not at all. Francis returned home and basically laughed in Carlos's face for being so gullible and formed an alliance with England and the Pope at the time to put pressure on Carlos. During this conflict, Carlos's forces entered Rome and sacked the city in 1527. It's a famous, or infamous rather, moment in history and in Carlos's term as leader. He imprisoned the Pope, and as you can imagine, that raised some eyebrows around Europe. As an interesting side note, the fact that he did that apparently would partially contribute to the break between Henry VIII and the Catholic Church, but we'll talk about that on a different day. Anyway, Francis continued to be a thorn in Carlos's side for many more years until his death in 1543. On a personal level, the 1520s was also a time when Carlos settled down as a husband and a father. He married the beautiful and enchanting Isabel of Portugal, the love of his life. This was in 1526. They would have several children, the first being the future King Philip II, or Felipe II. Isabel would die in 1539, and the loss would devastate Carlos. Isabel was a strong-willed woman, intelligent and good at running government. She was often entrusted with handling domestic affairs while her husband was away, which was often. Carlos spent most of those years outside of Spain, dealing with numerous issues and threats. He also had to take on challenges by the Ottoman Turks. The constant threat to Christian Europe, led by the dynamic and powerful ruler Suleiman the Magnificent, the Turks expanded into southeastern Europe and were soon the biggest menace to the continent, as well as to Spain's interests in the south, in the Mediterranean, and in Italy. He would become Carlos's nemesis throughout his life. The Spanish lost a couple of important naval battles to him, and the pirate Redbeard, on top of that, would be constantly wreaking havoc to Spanish possessions in the Mediterranean. Christianity itself was experiencing a major crisis from which it would never fully recover. The Reformation. Carlos was the one who, at the young age of 21, would call for the Diet of Worms, the famous Diet of Worms in 1521, and where he summoned Martin Luther to be questioned. Above all, Carlos saw Luther as a threat to the harmony of his empire and to the harmony of his legacy, or the legacy that he had inherited. He eventually outlawed Luther, but allowed him to go free. Martin Luther, in many other ways, would never actually go away, though. This was a particularly complicated issue for Carlos. He was sort of stuck between trying to defend the legacy of his Catholic heritage, while at the same time make efforts to understand the reality of his time. Eventually, a war broke out, and at the Battle of Mulberg in 1547, Carlos's forces routed the Protestants. They won the battle, but not the war. Eventually, the two sides signed the Peace of Augsburg in 1555, which ended hostilities between the two religious groups for now. So a lot was going on, but health issues would restrict Carlos in the final years of his life. He suffered from gout, a terrible case of gout, which is a circulation disorder brought on generally by a very, very unhealthy diet. Carlos ate and ate a lot, but he ate a lot of things that were not good for his system. In 1555, he began to give up his control, and in 1556, he abdicated formally in the Low Countries. His farewell speech is very interesting. His decision to step down also included some important changes to the political situation and in Spain and in Europe. His son, Felipe, or Philip II, would hold on to Spain and his possessions in the New World, as well as in the Low Countries and the south of Italy and Sicily, would stay with him. On the other hand, much of the Holy Roman Empire, or what is modern-day Germany and Austria, was handed over to his brother, Carlos's brother, Fernando. Carlos would return to Spain to spend his final days practically in seclusion in a faraway monastery called Yuste. It's in the region of Extremadura. You can't get, in my opinion, a greater contrast from the lavish court life that he led as a youth. Yuste is a very pretty place, but it's far, far away from anything. He would die a few years later in 1558. Now, Carlos has gone by two names, two numbers, and there's a reason for that. He is known as Carlos I of Spain, because he was the first Carlos of the kingdoms of Spain, but Carlos V, or Charles V, of the Holy Roman Empire. Protocol seems to favor the use of the higher rank, which would be the emperor, so most people refer to him as Carlos V. In fact, from what I can tell, there isn't a single tribute to Carlos I by that name, but there is a well-known plaza in Madrid or square known as Carlos V. So that is the first of the Habsburg kings, the universal ruler, as they sometimes called him. His son Philip II, Felipe, would take over and in a truer sense become the first king to inherit all of the Spanish domains, and Spain's empire would reach practically its highest moments, although there'll be some low moments too, and we'll have to tell you about them. You'll soon find out why. And that'll be all for today's episode. Thank you for listening to Brian's Spain Domain. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any comments or questions, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.